I got a phone call from a recruiter who was filling the job here at the Eagles. And I think I said, "Are you sure that you meant to call me?"
Hi, I'm Elise Notariani.
And I'm Klein Aliardi. And welcome to Millennials Looking for Mentors.
And thank you to Jefferson Health New Jersey for sponsoring our second podcast episode,
which is a very exciting one. We are talking with the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Media for the Philadelphia Eagles, Jen Cavanaugh.
Yeah, so super low on the totem pole there.
Yeah.
No one important at all.
We like totally weren't absolutely freaking out excited about this because I love the Eagles and Elise's dad loves the Eagles.
Yes. Season ticket holder, big fan, really wants me to be a big fan, and I just can't bring myself to care. I'm trying, I am.
Also hot take, this weekend the Eagles played in the first playoff game where they lost. And I do not understand how every year we are so bad and every year somehow by some technicality we end up in the playoffs and then we lose the first game and then we're out of the playoffs and everyone acts like it's such a big deal. And then it's just so frustrating. I don't know if that's a popular take, but whatever. That's how I feel. But we're not talking about sports today. We're talking about leadership, actually, because Jen had so many really good pieces of leadership advice. And
leadership advice and networking advice, which is concerning because now that I now know how to network, it means I have to actually network.
Cool.
And I'm a little bit looking forward to it. I'm a little worried.
I'm actually really curious, and Elise, since you run our Instagram, I would really appreciate a poll about this so I could get some information. I want to know if people actually do network and if that's still a thing.
I actually feel the same way.
I'm so curious about that. So what, I'll leave this scheduling up to you. When do you want to put that up? Tomorrow?
I don't know if I want the answers.
Well,
I'm curious, but do I want the answers? Because again, it's going to mean that I have to do it.
True. Good point. At some point, Elise is going to put up a poll and everyone needs to go vote. I feel like Jen will probably say yes, that she networks.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll let everybody be the judge of that. So should we switch over now?
Okay, get over.
All right. So we were hoping that we could start with you kind of taking us quickly through part of your career, because you have a very long and very impressive career. So I was thinking you could start at when you were at Universal. Is that where you've stayed the longest so far?
NBC Universal, yes. So I was hired at the Oxygen Network when it was still an independently owned and operated network. And then I stayed on board after the NBC Universal acquisition, which was really interesting because we moved from this kind of small, independently owned and operated environment to a much more, you know, kind of corporate environment connected to a much larger portfolio of networks.
So did you have to go about that in terms of like networking? Because some people are really into networking and some people are not. But obviously you were meeting so many different people who were changing roles all of a sudden.
Yeah, absolutely. So networking became a really important part of being successful in your job, both because it was encouraged internally, but also because it was a really effective way of learning how things operated quickly, helping to win, you know, the resources and support needed maybe for things at different times. But there was an internal networking piece that was critical, but also an external networking piece. So, you know, I really made a point of attending a lot of industry events, getting to know my peers who were working in similar roles within media and television in particular. And that became, you know, over time, really critically important because those are the people that I've definitely leaned on throughout the years, have, you know, still have relationships with to this day. And we all kind of, you know, collectively helped each other navigate different moments in our professional career. And working as a digital person within a television environment at that time was unusual because there was, I would say, less desire to, you were sort of using digital mediums to drive only real-time behaviors as opposed to what we have now, which is like, go here and watch it, you know, on this platform, yeah, or DVR it over here. So it helped to have other people who understood kind of the ambition of what we were trying to do at the time.
What is it like in your head when you just walk up to someone who you do not know and are like, hey, how do you get from we're strangers to, can you help me with my career?
Without being weird about it too.
Yes. Cause I could just do that.
Yeah. Well, everyone served cocktails. That's for sure. That was like, you know, it was, So I'll give you an example of one thing in particular. So there was this organization that probably exists today still called 212. And 212's goal was to basically act as a connector for people who worked in media in New York City. And they would do these like cruises around the city. Well, you can imagine, you know, you've got 20, 30 somethings, you know, bar drinks flowing. It wasn't hard to start a conversation, but right. In the absence of that, I would say, you know, I never really had a lot of trouble kind of striking up conversation and, you know, just kind of asking people. I would always kind of start, you know, with them, like, hey, where are you from? And, you know, what are you working on? And what do you think's interesting about what's happening in the industry? And that would generally, you know, help the conversation flow. And you're all there for the same reason, right? So it's not like you're in the grocery store approaching somebody and asking them questions about their job. Like we're all kind of here to meet people and talk about what we do. So that helps.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So don't walk up to strangers in the grocery store and try to network.
Probably not. Probably not.
Good to know. So how did you get from NBC Universal to the Eagles? Because those are, I mean, they're connected, but they're pretty different.
Yeah, no, they are connected, but different. So after I left NBC Universal, I kind of jumped to the startup side of things. So I worked for a company that was partially invested in by NBC Universal that had basically a social network for television. So I very much stayed in, you know, how do you use digital and social platforms to deepen the engagement between, you know, audiences and their favorite shows. And that was a really, I think, incredible experience, just, you know, seeing how startups work and what the differences are and the pros and the cons, and then still being connected to this environment that I was familiar with. And then from there, really went down a consulting path. And worked with, you know, some consulting firms, had my own. And that was really fun because that gave me an opportunity to basically take everything I had learned and help C-suite executives understand, you know, how they needed to think about and navigate the next 5 years of their company's life cycle, knowing, you know, that platforms like Hulu and Netflix were disrupting linear platforms and that wasn't going to go away. So that was, you know, something that let me put all of that kind of to work. And that's around the time I got a phone call from a recruiter who was filling the job here at the Eagles. And I think I said, are you sure that you meant to call me? Because I had no prior sports experience. And he basically said, no, they're kind of looking at people who come from, you know, media backgrounds who can bring some diversity of thought to the role. And that's, you know, how the Eagles opportunity came to be. And the more I learned about the role and what it is, you know, we had the chance to accomplish, I realized how, you know, very, very similar it was to like how you would construct a strategy for any major brand or media brand.
So does that mean that I still have a chance to work for the Eagles? Because I'm like that annoying girl that doesn't understand anything, but I do know the fight song. So that's like,
I'm impressed.
I was just gonna say, is that all it takes?
Yeah, absolutely. All you gotta do is sing the fight song and you get a job.
A really rousing rendition. Yeah,
exactly.
And since you were working with so many different people, were you able to find a lot of mentors along the way, or just people that you ended up growing alongside of?
Yeah, I think mentorship is a really interesting subject. I am very fortunate to have had mentors along the way, some of whom have been just really successful, strong women in my own family who've guided me at key moments in my life and career. But Also, I think we have this misconception that mentorship is something that, you know, requires a very deep investment over a very long period of time, right? We always say it's so important to have a mentor. Mentors can be really hard to find. And so often mm-hmm. there's this feeling of like, I'm missing something or I've been left out. And what I believe based on my experience is that you can have a series of, let's call them like micro mentors, people that you know, that you can kind of tap into at key moments because maybe their relevance or their experience is most relevant to the thing you're trying to work through or better understand or navigate. And, you know, that should never be, that's not to suggest that, you know, we should use people in a transactional way. It's like, keep your base of relationships really healthy. And don't worry about not having that one guru who's by your side, you know, for every step you take in the entirety of your career, but keep your relationships healthy and tap into those people that you know are the right people at the right time and consider that, you know, moment, a moment of mentorship and be, you know, clear and I would say intentional about your willingness to give back to them, you know, in return if they ever needed it.
Okay. That makes me feel a lot better. Cause I just feel like the idea of being like, when you're in college, everyone's like, oh, you have to have a mentor. And I'm like, great. So I have to email somebody and set this up and say, you're my mentor now. and that's obviously not how it works. And it makes me feel so much better to be like, no, it can just be a relationship and not transactional. Cause it feels that way sometimes.
Right. I mean, you want it to be authentic. Nobody wants to feel like they're only being reached out to because there's something the other person needs, which is where I think a lot of people maybe get into trouble with the, can I pick your brain emails, mm-hmm. right? It's like, sort of like, you'll have a lot better luck getting somebody to accept a LinkedIn request if you include a thoughtful note and maybe spend a little bit of time getting to know this person, what they've done, Google them, you know, just anything meaningful and authentic goes a long, long way. And some people will find mentors that they'll have with them for years. And that's terrific. I think my goal, though, is to try to make sure people understand that that is not the only the only option.
Right. That I just a really quick question. Is that true that the can I pick your brain email is like the kiss of death? Because that's what I've heard. Is that like, do not use the term pick your brain, like you are done.
Yeah. I really think, yeah, I think some people are prickly about the term itself, but yeah. I think it speaks to more of like, who's asking, right? Mm-hmm. If a dear friend or colleague or member of my team or one of my peers said, can I pick your brain about something? I would say, absolutely, and I'm there and I'm all ears. But when you get, you know, tons and tons of emails or LinkedIn requests from people you don't even know who haven't even attempted to establish a connection with you, want to pick your brain, it can get a little draining. There's a better way to go about it, I think is the point.
Yeah.
So ask them to be on a podcast.
Yeah really. I mean, talk about micro mentoring.
No, this is terrific. I love this medium and I love what you're doing. So it was a very easy yes for me.
Perfect.
So we appreciate that. So when you first started to manage people, what was that like? Did you have any hiccups? Because like when I first had my first couple interns, it was a whole different experience. I had no idea what to do.
Yeah, it can be a whole different experience. I would say probably a memory that would be a good descriptor of a hiccup would be working in an environment that was a very fun, vibrant, like workplace culture. We all worked in pop culture. We were all pretty young for the most part. And so my first direct reports were very close in age to me. And I remember coming into work like on Monday morning after, you know, I had been promoted and my team had been established, like not being totally clear where the lines were anymore. Like, is it okay if I go into the CAF and like talk to everybody about what, you know, happened on The Bachelor last night? Or can I not do that anymore? Because now I'm, you know, someone's boss. And that took a little bit of time to figure out. But I do remember like having that moment of like, I'm not really sure like what's appropriate and what's not appropriate anymore, or how much of, you know, my former self I could be in the workplace with these people who now just happen to report to me.
What did you end up settling on?
Yeah.
Be a human being, right? Like just be a normal person and be part of the culture and interact with people and just really be yourself. There's a time and a place to establish kind of working roles and develop myself as a leader, but that certainly didn't mean that I couldn't sit and talk about what happened on The Bachelor. And so I did.
I feel like that's the best way to get your get to know your team, get them on your side.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. I agree.
And speaking of team members, how do you advocate for your team members? Because I feel like that's a very important role of being a leader, but at the same time, you have to balance, you know, who you're reporting to and what your asks are with looking out for your team type of a thing. So.
Yeah. So my perspective on advocacy, similarly to mentorship, is that it's not this one big thing that hangs in the balance every once in a while, right? To me, advocacy, again, is something that can happen every single day in every single conversation you have. And so advocating for my team is about first, like, understanding who they are and what is important to them, whether that is specific to a project or a goal that they're trying to accomplish, or how they develop, you know, professionally in their career. Understanding what their professional brand is or what they want it to be, because that helps me literally in every single conversation reinforce that in small ways that aren't just, you know, we have this thing that's a make or break and now is my chance to like go to bat for this person. The groundwork's already been laid, right? I've already been able to be clear about their contributions towards a certain thing, or, you know, an amazing task that they had completed that ultimately ladders up to that conversation around, you know, maybe something that, you know, is as important as a discussion around a promotion or ownership of a project. But I think advocacy just is something that happens all the time.
Yeah.
And how do you go about trying to leave that time to get to know people and really understand what they're going through? Because especially in your job, I'm sure you have so many things you're doing every day. That, I mean, sometimes you can overlook like, oh, I should check in with this person as just a person, or, you know, sometimes you get wrapped up in your own job.
Yeah, I think you said it, you have to make time for it. Probably one of the most important parts of my job is making time for my team, ensuring that I consistently understand what their needs are at any given moment, because my job is less about, you know, tasks, if you will, and more about getting obstacles out of their way and getting them what they need to complete the tasks that are in front of them. So I think any one of them would tell you, we talk a lot. We make a lot of, you know, time on the calendar available for us to connect, and we usually use it all, and sometimes we can give it back, but communication is everything, particularly with a big team that's very integrated. I oversee a marketing team, a creative team, a content team, a social team, a community relations team. Wow. So communication is kind of everything.
Yeah.
And so what happens though, when you have to have some negative communication, if somebody's not doing what they should be doing, or if a project's not going the way it should be?
Yeah. I just believe in addressing issues as they arise. I think it's really important to talk about it as it happens, you know, be an empathetic human being, you know, but be direct, because people 9 times out of 10, they want to know when things maybe aren't going well, or when and where they have areas to improve. And I don't think anyone would say, you know what, I think it'd be really great if my boss just sat on that thing that they hated that I did for a year until my annual review, right? You know, every day is a day to get better. And those, I also think normalizing those kinds of conversations is really important. The more comfortable you become having conversations that involve constructive criticism, the easier it is to have more of them, and the better kind of everyone gets in the meantime. So that's my position on that. And I think, you know, having mutual respect built in and a culture of transparency where they know, you know, that they can not walk away from a conversation like that and feel like it was anything other than what we discussed, you know, so we can all kind of move on.
Right. The not taking it personally thing is definitely something that I think a good amount of people find they need to work on, myself included.
Yeah, it took me a hot second.
Yeah. Were you the kind of person who, like, you were always just, you got that this was just about, you know, the work and not necessarily about you, or did you have to work on that?
Oh, I was the exact opposite. Like, my personality type is, you know, I'm very empathetic, but I'm a people pleaser, and I was a perfectionist, and I wanted to make my bosses happy. And
oh my God, I'm looking in the mirror.
Right. I wanted to do everything right. So every bit of criticism early on absolutely felt like a personal attack. And if I could think of anything that was the most important and probably hardest thing for me to grow through as I advanced in my career, it was that.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for that? Is there anything that you maybe had, like, a day where you were like, oh, this is how I get through this?
Well, first I had to sort of address why I felt that way, right? Because what you can't do is project it on someone else. I had to own my feelings and my responses to certain situations and kind of go inwards and say, what is it about this scenario or this person or this type of feedback that makes me feel, you know, so bad personally? Mm-hmm. And also ask, you know, I had to sort of ask up around, you know, what are the best ways to manage up to a boss? What are their preferred modes of communication? Because when I started to ask those questions, I started to get answers like I just gave you, right? Like, I believe in being really direct and dealing with the problem as it happens, because it allows you to grow faster and it allows us to all move on and find our success faster. Well, that's a great outcome, right? What a great reason to give someone or to have a tough conversation, because you want them to grow, not because you're trying to stifle them. And asking that question helped me get that answer and then understand, you know, that it wasn't a bad thing. It was just part of the growth process.
Right. The managing up is interesting. And I was looking at your LinkedIn, and it struck me that you hit a point where you were now reporting to founders and presidents. Like, you had been reporting to maybe, you know, VPs or directors and stuff like that. And then you had that switch. Did you change the way that you do either manage up or just communicate to your upper management when that happened?
It did change for me, primarily because as a director working for a VP, like, we were just kind of like in the trenches together all the time, you know, such that our one-on-ones each week, like, we pretty much walked into the room knowing everything that was going on and just using that time to talk about maybe some things that were right in front of us that we need to you know, come up with answers for, as opposed to reporting to a president or a founder who is being pulled in a million different directions, right? Who you don't always spend as much time with on a day-to-day basis. And so the use of that time becomes different. Mm-hmm. And being really, really intentional and deliberate about prioritizing that time was something that, you know, was definitely that I became more aware of in that sort of shift. And also that it was important for me to, you know, don't bring problems, like, bring solutions, right? Because we don't have time.
That's a big one.
It's just right to sit and kind of like talk it out. Even though, you know, my boss, and frankly, I've been very lucky, my boss and many other bosses before him have been incredibly, like, accessible to me and to the staff, generally, but they are pulled in a lot of directions and you only have so much time and these are big decisions you're trying to make. So prioritizing and being proactive about having solutions ready for the problems you're going to discuss were big ones.
Yeah. Definitely. I think it's hard, especially at our age and our where we're at our career, mm-hmm. to figure out when you switch from, okay, I see a problem and I'm not ready to have that solution because I'm not in charge. I don't make the decisions. I don't, you know, like somebody else, a manager usually is in charge of that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you reach a point, which I think we're at now, where they're like, okay, we hired you so that you can do this for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can be able to step up. And it's a really weird transition. How do you help coach your team through that?
My advice in that case would be, one, celebrate the fact that you've arrived in that position, right? Because you've earned the trust and respect to be an individual who's looked to problem solve within an organization. And I would say, don't be afraid to like talk to people, ask for people's advice. Like we use this term internally, like listening tour. And all that really says is before we decided that we knew best, we talked to five people that we thought would have interesting perspectives on an issue to help formulate what our recommendation ended up being. So I would say, don't feel like you have to have all the answers within you. I think some of the most successful people are people who have a curious mind and a student mindset throughout their entire lives. And they don't see asking questions and being curious and involving other people as a sign of weakness on their part. It's actually a sign of strength. Yeah. And it takes some of the stress off, right?
That I love that. I wish someone had told me that like 5+ years ago, because
yeah,
going with the perfectionist thing for a long time in my head, it was like, oh, if I have to go to someone and ask them for help on this or ask them for suggestions on how to figure this out, it means I can't do it. And it's right. Like, that's not, like
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no one's out here like doing everything on their own. Like no one has all the answers.
But I think that's an important point. You know, we're in the midst of like a culture of conversation that really didn't exist in a widespread way 10, 15, certainly 20 years ago. Not only did we not have podcasts to help carry those messages from, you know, anybody who wanted to create them, right. But they weren't conversations that we were having. Like, I think, you know, this movement towards transparency around compensation is very, very interesting, right? Like that's another thing people didn't talk about and kept as, you know, I don't know, close to the vest, and that was encouraged. And so what does it mean when you really start to like unlock these things and talk about them in an open way? Like, I think it's actually tremendous.
Yeah. Your whole life right now is based around trying to manage this big brand. And the Eagles brand has a lot of personality that comes with it. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of balance managing this big brand versus your own brand?
Well, I certainly don't manage this brand on my own. The whole organization, I would say, plays a role in that. But I think one of the things that has made me enjoy my time here so much and has made it a good fit is we're very much alike. Like in terms of our attributes and our values, like I would say the ones that I would use to describe the Eagles or our community, you know, our mission is to inspire and serve the greatest football community in the world. So if I were to describe their attributes and mine personally, I would say they're actually pretty similar, you know, being passionate and being progressive and being real and being tough and being empathetic, like all those things like very much align with me. So I think that's made me feel really at home here. And, you know, balancing it is, it's not always balanced. Sometimes it's very imbalanced. You know, sometimes work demands a lot more from me than my personal life. And sometimes it's the other way around. And like, that's okay. But I think as far as my personal brand or my professional brand here, you know, really just being seen as real and approachable and part of this much larger thing that means a lot to a lot of people is like what keeps me going.
In all of your answers, there's this foundation of, yeah, I'm just being a human being and I'm just, you know, being who I am, which sounds easy, but I feel like maybe isn't necessarily always
no. It's not, right? Like it's, well, not for everyone. Yeah. The people who that does come easily to, oh, I admire them so much, right? Because as we were talking about earlier, you know, for a long time, I operated under this belief that I needed to have a persona that was my professional persona and then a persona that was my, you know, and my professional persona had to be different than my personal persona because my personal persona was probably, you know, too soft or too, you know, whatever the case may be. And eventually that is where the conflict lived, right? It became very difficult to advance and feel like you had to be more and more unlike yourself to be successful. And I would say the good news for people like me and people like us is that, you know, the sort of attributes of leaders that have become embraced over time are more in line with people. Like people now say, you know, be a human being, right? Like connect in authentic ways with your staff as opposed to, you know, maybe in past years where there was kind of a rule by fear mentality and that was really admired. You know, that just isn't so much the case today.
Thank God.
Yeah, really.
As people coming up, this is great.
Yeah, very happy about that. It sounds like a lot in your career time in your career has changed because you also, I mean, just being in digital kind of strategy, that field has changed so much and you went from, like you were saying, like when you were doing media and you were doing TV, it was about getting people to TV. And now it's about, you know, everything around that. Has that changed the way that companies brand themselves?
Yeah. So I've always been interested in like, what's next? Like knowing that everything was really interconnected. Like I started my career doing web development, like literally building e-commerce websites way back in the day. And like, as soon as I felt like I understood how to do that, it was like, well, how are you going to get people there? And then SEO was like a thing very, very early on. It's like, okay, well, now we got people there. We're like, how are you going to make money with it? And so I think that natural sort of path of curiosity has always put me in the right place at the right time. To be honest, like my husband's always like, it is crazy how like I just, whatever I'm interested in the moment tends to then quickly be the thing that people want to understand better or that people are looking to grow. But I do think that it has changed things. And look, we're all sort of seeing it now. We're doing it together in the form of a podcast. The democratization of media overall is so fascinating. You know, you went from having just this core group of entities that controlled all the messages that reached the greatest number of people to now individual creators being able to amass audiences larger than those big media companies. And I think, you know, it's presented a real opportunity for brands to deepen their engagement and change the way that they engage with their audiences. It's certainly more cost effective in some respects. Like if you look at, you know, sticking with audio for a second, Twitter Spaces, Clubhouse, you know, just all these new things that don't really cost a lot of money to do, but can create a ton of value for folks. You know, NFTs, obviously huge right now. And we just launched, the NFL just launched their first round of NFTs a few weeks ago. So each club made about 125 available and they sold out in like 12 hours.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say we had one that sold thousands, you know, you buy it for $10 and people are reselling them for lots and lots of money. So that's a fascinating space. So yeah, in many ways I would say it is changing the game, but that's exciting.
Yeah. That's so funny because I was listening to some podcast that you did, I want to say like a year ago, maybe, or maybe 2 years ago when TikTok was just getting big.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You were saying that the Eagles were the top followed NFL team. And that's so interesting that you really are just like on the cusp of whatever's coming next. Cause the fact that you all just, you know, sold all these NFTs and that's like barely become the like it thing. It's Elise's favorite thing to talk about is NFTs.
It's so interesting.
It's a lot. But it's so interesting. You're right there with all of it.
Well, and it's so important too, right? Because this is like where future generations are spending their time. This is where future generations are, you know, investing their money. And we as marketers and brands have to, like, great for us that we have an amazing fan base today and that our games are sold out. But like, we don't know that that is always going to be the case going forward. So for any brand or progressively minded organization, it'd be crazy to just not always be looking at like how you intend to future-proof. And the way you future-proof is by finding the right ways to engage with, you know, upcoming generations. Like I was just reading an Adweek article the other day that someone on my team sent me that was, you know, kind of addressing Gen Z, who very soon will be graduating from college, coming into the workforce with billions of dollars of, you know, spending amongst them. And there was a line in there kind of just about their attitude towards work and like not wanting a traditional 9-to-5, which we can all understand, right? Flexibility in their work, but like the importance of side hustles and having the flexibility to have a side hustle, whether that's on Etsy or having a podcast or investing in NFTs. Like those were all meaningful ways that they were going to grow their wealth. And like, it's just different and you got to stay connected to it.
Yeah. Love it.
Well, so we have a couple very important other questions for you. And we're going to swap back and forth and do some rapid fire questions.
Oh, okay.
So work from home or work from the office or stadium where you are right now?
That's really hard.
I thought this was going to be easy until I saw your setup. And then I was like, oh.
Yeah. Sitting in the suite, like overlooking the field. That is pretty good.
No, I'll tell you why it's hard, because like I like both.
That's an answer.
I like both a lot. Like I love the flexibility and then I love seeing my team on game day or at the office and being together. And when we don't see each other in person for too long, it's like a bummer. So I like both. I know it's kind of a non-answer, but
no, that's it. That works. I guess
I'll take
that.
It.
Yeah. digital calendar or paper planner?
Digital.
Really?
I am like, yeah, I have terrible handwriting. I've always like carried my laptop around. Like I'm the one in meetings with a laptop. Like it's just easier for me, I guess, the way my brain works. So for sure.
I just made the switch too. So I'm totally on your page here.
Oh, I'm still on paper.
On your digital page.
I think the paper thing is, it's so great too. Like a lot of my team members are so organized. Yes, they have their like notebooks and it doesn't work as well for me, but yeah, I get it.
So home game or on the road?
Home game for sure. Like I love going away. I love traveling with the team. I love experiencing other cities and fan bases, but there's absolutely nothing like being at Lincoln Financial Field with 70,000 people when it's just like rocking. And it's really the coolest part of this job. Like people will say, oh, coming from TV, you know, how different is it? And I'm like, you know, it's actually not that different, except that 8 or 9 times a year, we get to throw this like massive event, right? For 70,000 people. That feels like a party. And that is just, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. When you think of it like that, you are throwing an event for an absurd amount of people. That's
like, just a big Philly block party.
Yeah.
With a game in the background.
Totally. There's nothing like it. Have you guys been to a game?
No. Oh yeah. My dad has season tickets.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know,
so scrolling social or binging Netflix show?
Social. I'm still addicted to TikTok. It's a problem.
Same.
I love Netflix, but not like I love TikTok. Like I'm just so obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Learned so much. I find the creator so fascinating. Like it's just.
Yeah. I've deleted and re-downloaded it 3 times because I was like, this is it. I need to stop. And then a month later, it's like, hey,
yeah,
no, okay, I don't fine.
Yeah, an hour goes by like that.
And so what is your to-go game day food? Or go-to, not to-go, go-to.
You can take it to-go if you want. Day food. Well, when I'm at the stadium, you're generally eating whatever's in the press box, right? So I'll give you like a home answer. Like if we were, you know, watching from home, I would say wings. I'm a big like classic wing person. Nice. I could, you know, eat tons of them.
Do you have a go-to wing spot?
No, we make them. Oh, I think they're...
Oh. You make wings?
Oh, yeah. They're amazing. First of all, you can make them in the oven. They're so delicious. I've mastered them on the grill. The air fryer is like the best ever. So yeah, it's kind of an obsession, but they're so easy to make at home. Like
that's just impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I should probably get on that.
Well, thank you so much. This was seriously so fantastic and informative.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's so much fun talking to you guys. Thank you so much. And congrats on the podcast and much luck going forward.
Thank
you. Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me.
Thanks to Jen for that great interview.
And don't be surprised if I send you a video of me singing the fight song as like a resume for a part-time kind of side gig sort of thing. I think it would be very appropriate.
I think it would be very smart to maybe post it on your Instagram so that everyone can see it, so that everyone can understand your passion.
No. I don't want to give everyone this like competitive advantage here, you know.
All right. Well, make sure you tune in every other Wednesday for our new episodes.
And if you have someone you want us to talk to, reach out at mlfmpodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See ya.